we are back with another episode of Bed Talks. That's a classic. You youngins might not know that song. I remember when that song came out and my parents were like, you're not listening to that song. But that is Sexual Healing by the great Marvin Gaye. And I thought it was so appropriate for our guest that we have on today, Ms. Kane Joyland. She is a sex and intimacy expert. You may have seen her on Instagram and other social media platforms. And she's all about educating us about sex. Welcome to the show, Kane.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's so great to have you on the show. I always come by my guests in the weirdest ways. People will say, hey, you need to check this person out. And so someone suggested I follow you. And I went to look at your Instagram page and I was like, this is amazing. She is actually teaching people about things that they normally don't want to talk about related to sex and that they may feel a little uncomfortable with, but God, do people need this education? So tell our listeners a little bit about how you got into such a taboo subject and what drew you to it.
Well, I've been studying sexuality years and years. I actually stole my parents' book back when I was 14 years old. And then I ended up starting an adult novelty company. So I sold sex toys. I'd never been to a sex toy party, but I decided to sell sex toys based on the way that I felt they should be sold. And at the events, people would take notes, and then it turned into coaching sessions, and it just turned into something different. And so I asked myself, where would one turn to get questions, to get answers to these questions without feeling shame, without feeling guilt, or without feeling judged? And so that's how it kind of came about. And so I did a bit of research and found out that it was, in fact, a career. So I moved forward. But I've been studying sexuality for over 2 decades. It's been a long time.
Wow, for 2 decades. So like you've been studying this topic for a long time. I think people... For over 2 decades, I think people are always curious about like sex. It's kind of that thing of we know when it feels good and when it doesn't, right? We know when we have that physical chemistry to someone. You know, why do you think it's such a taboo topic? Like, why are people ashamed to talk about, you know, like their needs, their wants and desires? I mean, I think it's gotten definitely better as time has gone on, but there still is sometimes a culture where people don't want to have these conversations. So why do you think it's so taboo?
Absolutely. There's still absolutely stigma attached to that. It has to do with the messages that we receive and that we internalize from, say, our family, churches, society, our friends. It's just this taboo subject that we shouldn't talk about. It's something bad attached to it, such as what they say is bad. They say pregnancy, then STIs. You know, they've attached stigma around it, whether it's indirectly or directly. If you think about it, when we're growing up, we're not even allowed to call our genitals the proper name. You know, they come up with all of these names like pocketbooks and your P-word. And so that indirectly tells us that something's wrong. And so we carry that into our adulthood. And so even though we have sex all around us, there's not a whole lot of conversation about sex. And I really do think it has a lot to do with society and our upbringing.
I mean, you've been studying sex for 20 years. You said over 2 decades. Do you feel like there's always more to learn about sex? Are you still learning new things about sex as someone who's in this area?
Yes, I am still learning. I'm still learning. And that's one of the biggest myths. A lot of times people say, oh, I have this. I got this. And this, I know exactly what I'm doing. But people need to remain open and understand that it's an art. It's something that we learn. It's something we've never been taught before. So you can always expound and learn more. This past weekend, I celebrated my 32nd wedding anniversary, and my husband and I still find positions. Still to this day, we find positions in new texts.
Wow.
Yes, to this day. And we try a lot.
That sounds like a book. That sounds like a book. Year one. Year two. X amount of positions. Yeah.
But when you think about it,
and that's a good question. So you, no, go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, how long have you been married again?
32 years this past Saturday.
Wow. So I have a really good follow-up question to that. as someone who's been married 32 years, how do you keep things, and I'm sure people ask you this all the time, how do you keep things fresh? How do you keep things from getting stale or like redundant or people doing this, you know, doing the same type of moves right in the bedroom?
It's the key is novelty. The key is novelty. You have to constantly explore it. What I always suggest people do is start with yourself. So when I say novelty, start with what you already know. So for example, if you have certain positions that you're used to doing, if you slightly change your angle, that completely changes the way the position feels. So say if it's woman on top, if you lean backwards, if you lean forward, if you put your legs flat, if you put your knees down, if you twist 180 degrees, if you twist 360 degrees while you're riding, all of that gives a different sensation and experience and adds novelty to the act. So you want to create new ways and new places. Also think about a lot of us may stay in our bedroom, maybe moving to the couch or moving to the shower or moving to the step or doing it in the car, in the garage, could add a bunch of novelty, but it's pretty much we're doing the same thing, but it's different. And so those are the type of things that we want to really explore and look at. I have a class that's coming out and that covers oral sex, fellatio. And in that class, I teach over 30 different techniques and 6 different ways to use your mouth. So it's the same thing, but it's done differently with different novelties added to it.
No, I like that. I feel like, you know, people get stuck in thinking that sex is one thing, but I think there's so many ways to be intimate with someone. And so I think mixing it with oral sex, mixing it up with hand jobs, mixing it up with different techniques can just make, just like you said, changing the location or the environment or just subtly changing, you know, changing positions. Because I think like sometimes I feel like the way people have sex, and I think we're all guilty of this to some degree, is how we started to have sex. So we go back to foundationally how we, this is a little more explicit conversation, so I hope kids aren't listening, but we go back more explicitly to like how we got off originally, and people kind of stick with that, or they get their education in the wrong places. So I've heard men talk about, hey, this is how they do it in porn, so I know this is the way a woman likes it, as opposed to validating that with their partner or asking the question of what their partner would like, and how they'd like to receive sex.
Yes, I talk about that. Porn is not for sex. It's meant for entertainment. Porn stars themselves don't have sex in that fashion. It's meant for the camera. There's things that you never see. You don't see any form of intimacy. You barely see them touch each other in any way outside of some type of aggressive sex act. I'm not against porn, but I think that we need to make sure that we have it in its place. It's not sex education, and understand that what they're showing you on the screen is one type. It's one type of body. It's one type of penis. It's one type of vulva. And unfortunately, a lot of times it causes people to feel shame about themselves because they think something's wrong with their genitals because it doesn't look like what they see on porn, which is, like I said, this much of society. It's not the norm. And they don't talk about the fact that there's so many vaginoplasty.
I was just gonna say there's so many different shapes of bodies and genitals, right? Like in a way that everyone's kind of unique in some way or form of fashion. So if you're looking for that particular image of someone, it's really a false image because that's only one person, and they tend to present kind of a similar image over and over, which is unfair.
Absolutely, and that's what causes a lot of shame and the problems of dysphoria on with people because they think something's wrong with them. I did a post about penis size, about average penis size. And it was 5.16 and some studies say 5.25. And it was the response of the followers were shocked when I put that on there because they're used to seeing these images of 8 and 9 inches, which is so outside of reality.
You know? Right, right. You know, that being, keep going, I'm sorry.
Yes, and the same holds true with the act itself. When you're showing that aggressiveness, maybe your partner doesn't like that aggressiveness. A lot of us don't even know what amazing sex is because we haven't taken the time to learn.
Right.
Every person is different, so.
And I always feel like I've had these conversations with girlfriends and friends of the opposite sex. And when people say they don't enjoy sex, the first thing that does come to my mind is they just haven't had the right sexual experience. And there could be certain experiences they've had that have shaped that in their mind. But then when they do get to that point where they have exceptional sex or really good sex, it's funny how it shifts again. But I think the key to that is people educating themselves around sex. Like, it shouldn't be something, like you said, that's so taboo, because it's very natural. I mean, we were built to reproduce, right? And to be intimate with one another. And this gives me another question that I wanted to ask you. So like, how does someone tell someone, like, how do they give them feedback if they're not getting what they want in the bedroom? Because with men and women, we both have sensitive egos, right? And a lot of times, it could be so hard to give someone that kind of feedback, especially if they think they're laying it down. So what do you do, or how do you, you know, advise couples to talk to each other about their needs and wants in a way that helps to build up a healthy sexual relationship, but in a way that kind of honors people's egos as well?
We always have to lead with kindness. It's not necessarily always what you say, it's how you get. So instead of focusing on what's wrong, focus on what's right and redirect them. So for example, if you're in the act itself, use your words or your moans and things like that to direct your partner. For example, if something feels good to you, say, oh yes, right there. Oh, that feels so good, because that's reinforcing that act. And you're essentially training them with the things that you like. If it's something that you do not like, it just write them a little harder, a little softer. See, unfortunately, we use our mouths for so many things when we're intimate, but we don't use it to speak. We don't say what we like. So you want to be very gentle with the things you like. And if you're outside of the bedroom, you can certainly discuss, you can say, honey, I absolutely love when you did X, Y, Z. I love when you did dot, dot, dot. And then start a conversation. Because what may happen is your partner may say, well, what did you think about that? And that gives you the opportunity safely to say, it was okay. It wasn't my favorite. I really like this more. And it gives, and like I said, it's a little safer to do it.
Yeah. I always never could understand why people would go through the act of sex and not really feel like they should get something out of it. Not in a selfish way. I think sex is a shared expression of how you express love, or if you are just very physically attracted to someone. Okay, let's put that out there too. But I never understood that. I'm like, you're in this act. It's very intimate. You are giving your body to someone. And I do consider sex very serious. So for people listening, I do believe there should be the right things put in place. If you are dating around, you need to be protecting yourself. Some people choose to do that within a marriage situation just for extra safety. You shouldn't have to, but that's each, you know, couple's call. But I've always been just like surprised that people will go through it and say, I fake an orgasm. I'm like, why are you doing that? Like, that's totally throwing off things, you know, because you're telling this person that they are doing the right thing. And so you're reinforcing a bad habit, actually. And then number two, I like what you said, just, you know, giving people cues along the way. Like, when you give feedback, it's just like we do it with our kids. You know, when our kids do something good, well, we reinforce it and say, wow, I'm so proud of you. That was great. So I often don't understand, like, why we wouldn't think to, like, do it with our partners, right? In a similar way of saying, hey, I enjoyed this, or, you know, here, you're right there. That's great, right? Like, reinforcing the act as it's going along. Because I think that's what also builds a stronger connection physically to your partner. It helps them to understand your body. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, it is a hard conversation, you know, but with any relationships, be it sexual, emotional, whatever, communication is that foundation for that relationship. And in order for you to have an amazing sex life, you have to talk. You have to say what it's like. But people have challenges, people have egos, and then there's also shame in there. Because again, we've been conditioned, that's not something that we talk about. You just do it. You know, and we've also been conditioned that we're supposed to save ourselves to marriage. And so when we get into these relationships, we really don't know what to do, because we have not been taught. We have not been shown. Everything's been bad. And now all of a sudden it's good. Go do it, you know? And so we really haven't been taught. And that's why people like us help people navigate those conversations and let them know it's okay, it's completely normal. That's why I have the type of conversations that I have. I often say that I say things that people are thinking.
Totally. I totally agree with that. If you've seen her demonstrations and her feedback, I was watching them like, yep, she is definitely in people's minds of what they're thinking, but they may be afraid to express. And I think you and I share a similar passion. I always say this about relationships, that we go into it kind of blindly, not really thinking about how we're raised impacts how we go, you know, function in our relationships, or our experiences, what we see modeled before us. And I think sex is very similar, in that we may see movies, we see the fairy tale ending in the movie, and then we get married and say we're conservative, say we don't have sex till marriage. We have all these expectations, but we don't talk about it, right? What those expectations are. And I think sex is such a natural, normal conversation to have. And I think physical attraction and physical connection is important to understand with the person you're talking about spending your life with or being in a long-term relationship is a huge component of your relationship. So,
but oftentimes people don't take the time to find out what they're like. And what people don't understand is kind of what I mentioned earlier, that sex is something that's learned. And every time you switch partners, you need to relearn it again. And then you need to continue to learn. So what people need to do for an amazing sex life is to take the time to first learn yourself, find out what feels good to you. And a lot of us don't know. Like they'll say my needs aren't met, and I'll ask them, what are your needs? What is it that you desire? What does great sex look like for you? What does it feel like? Where do you like to be touched? And they cannot answer the question. And so I often ask, okay, so if you can't answer this question, how do you think your partner is going to be able to navigate and find these things if you don't know?
Right.
You know, we can't automatically assume, but it's such an easy fix. It's super easy to fix that. And that is exploring one another's bodies, exploring ourselves, and talking.
Absolutely. I say the same thing about relationships. Like, you first have to know yourself. I think everything is foundational to you, because you're the one thing that you can control. You can't control all the other things, but if you're not clear on it, how can someone else get clear on it? So it's once you have that clarity, it's much easier for the other person to reciprocate that. That's funny. We have very similar philosophies there. I think one thing that I think about with sex is, like, you know, sometimes on both sides of the coin, there could be men who ejaculate prematurely. And I want you to kind of talk about that and how you advise couples in that situation. But then I think on the other side, women are very mental when it comes to sex. So sometimes for women, it's more the mental buildup, and the physical is a part of it for sure. But if that mental is blocked, because women just, we tend to do a lot, have a lot on our minds sometimes as we're going into the bedroom. And sometimes that's why some women are like, okay, I just want to get this over with, as opposed to really enjoying the moment. I kind of want you to talk to both sides of the coin, and, like, how do you advise couples in those situations? Because, you know, men do know when you're present and when you're not. And likewise, we know when our men aren't present as well. So how do you advise against, like, guys who have issues with the premature ejaculation, you know, coming too soon, or the women who don't feel turned on enough? Like, how do you find that impasse for a couple, or help them find that impasse?
Well, it depends on what the cause. So when we look at that, when we're being intimate with our partner, we're not just tolerating that. We're trying to do it. It's meant for pleasure. Check it. We've done it for the week. Okay. So when we're talking about premature ejaculation, or I like to call it rapid ejaculation or eager ejaculation, because I just feel like premature has a negative connotation around it. And so what we look at are things like, what's going on? The very first thing we look at with both is what kind of medical concerns are going on there? Are there potential medical concerns that are going on there? So we address those, testosterone levels, things like that, for them to get work on, and see what's going on. We're also looking at teaching them how to tolerate pleasure. So we're talking about the penis owner. You have to understand how to tolerate pleasure. So sometimes premature ejaculation or rapid ejaculation is associated with anxiety. So then we're looking at what is causing you to be anxious? Are you in your head worried that you're going to come fast? If you are worried that you're going to come fast, you're going to come fast. You know, if people don't understand that dynamic. So it's working with them, help them tolerate the pleasure, give them specific exercises. There's techniques that their partner can also do. There's a squeeze technique. There are things you watch the testicles. So when the testicles lifts into the body, that's an indication that they're close to ejaculation. And so there's a technique where you pull the testicles away from the body to kind of play with, to keep them from ejaculation. There's a squeeze technique where you squeeze the tip of the penis that you can kind of help them out their ejaculation. So there's a number of things, but it really boils down to what is the cause of that rapid ejaculation. But we always start with medical first to rule out the medical,
right?
How to move forward. Now, as it relates to desire, you said desire, was it with the women?
So with women, you know, I know women sometimes reach an age where they have less estrogen, right? Or they could be coming through a pregnancy and the hormones are totally off for a while. It takes time for the hormones to readjust. So they may have difficulties being turned on enough or stimulated enough. So I was curious, like, I'm sure you've heard women talk about these things, you know, how do you typically advise them through that as well?
Well, it's a number of things that can help that increase in desire. And when you're, we call them hormonal soup, when we're going through that, where our hormones are all over the place, we may not have that spontaneous desire, but sometimes once we get going into the desire, when we have that responsive meaning that we're getting stimulated in some form of fashion, then it's easier for us to transition, or easier for the person to transition into feeling that feeling. Now the question is whether or not they're having decreased sensitivity in their clitoris, because sometimes when that drops, there are some challenges there. It's also, how are you feeling postpartum? Are you depressed? Are you feeling heard? Are you happy? There are a number of things that can cause that desire to drop. If there's challenges in the relationship, that's an issue. So if it's challenges in the relationship, of course, we're gonna address those issues first. When it's hormonal things, they are referred to their doctor to see if we can balance that in some form. Some of it just takes time. And then that means that you have to make a concerted effort to connect with your partner and get your needs met. And that may not be intercourse initially. Maybe that's cuddling, maybe that's massage, maybe that's something to lead you to the path. Maybe there's something sensate focus. There's various things that we can do depending on the foundational reasons for the concerns. So
yes.
Medications too. Medications are huge. It will not, like antidepressants and anxiety medication, things like that can completely deplete the desire altogether and your ability to actually experience an orgasm as well.
Man, our hormonal systems are so delicately balanced is what I'm hearing, because there could be so many things that can interfere or turn, you know, change your feelings around that experience, your emotions, your emotional center, your brain center.
Mm-hmm. Especially like myself, I'm in menopause now. So perimenopause, menopausal women, we all have these, our hormones are just all over the place, So we have to kind of learn coping mechanisms with that. And then we also have to communicate with our partner what our needs are. And sometimes those needs could be, can you clean up the house because I'm tired? can you do something for me to take the weight off of me, rub me down, and then maybe I might be in the mood.
Mm-hmm. You know, just the simple things.
And sometimes we think we're doing these really grandiose events, and sometimes it doesn't, because a lot of women are responsive, meaning that they get aroused once someone stimulates them in some form of fashion, instead of like, "Oof, I'm ready to go." Right. So right. Life, when we have life to do with.
What techniques like would you give for people who are dating, they're newer in relationships, and they're deciding to make that move of becoming intimate? Like, what are, if you could have them walk back time a little bit, like before they make that next step, what are the things you would say are just definitely things they should do before they even get into the bedroom?
I would have them ask, what is good sex with you? What types of things do you enjoy? How do you like to be touched? Do you like to be kissed? Do you like to be, you know, do you like oral? Do you like anal? Do you, all of those questions, just to kind of get those foundational things in place. Because typically what we do, we jump into an intimate encounter based on what we think they want. And we perform based on what we've done in the past that have gotten good responses from the last person. That may not
right.
This person, you know. So I had a situation where it was a couple, and one person, when I asked, well, what's good sex? One said, oh, I love it fast and hard and this and that. And the other person said, well, I like it soft. I like it slow. And there are two different pages in their dating, trying to move forward, but they like two totally different things because they did not take the time to have just that small conversation. And then another thing is playing explorer. And that's where you just explore each other's body. And you talk with no expectation of orgasm. And you just rub, maybe you kiss their neck and say, how do you like that? And the person gives you feedback, and you work your way down, all the way down to the body, getting feedback, taking mental notes of what that person told you. So when you actually get into the act, you have all this foundational knowledge that the person you with have communicated with you. And then you want to continue that throughout the process, throughout the relationship. Because as you know, we change. What we like to know is not what we never really out. So,
but yeah, I like what you said though, because I do feel like each person is different. And what works for one person may totally turn off another person. And I can see that could be a disconnect over time because people tend to go back to what they're comfortable with, right? And everyone has different desires, different. Some people like more aggressive play. Some people are more subtle. Some people more foreplay. So there's just all these different nuances. So I think the only way to get the right answer is to ask. I mean, it seems very common sense, but sometimes we don't do that thing you assume, right? You're like, it worked here, so I think it's going to work here. And that's where I think you're saying, look, you got to communicate and talk about these things, because eventually it does come up. You know, if it's an issue over time, it builds and becomes bigger.
Also, you have to also understand that at different times, you know, vulva is fickle. So you may have done something that was amazing 2 weeks ago, and it may not be so amazing this time.
Right. We're human. Like, we like change. I mean, it's like we like change in certain ways when it comes to, I think, our relationships. We like things to kind of not be the same mundane thing. Cause I coach people, and when they tell me it's very boring, the relationship, I'm always like, you're actually in a good place, cause that means you have a routine. But it's just human nature to want something exciting. And I think that's what spurs people to, you know, to go and explore sometimes, because they're looking for that excitement of what it feels like when it's new and it's unexpected. So that's what you're saying basically, is that you got to change it up, keep things fresh, and just look at it a little differently, vary it a little bit.
And I think that also when it comes to sold this illusion of relationships and fairy tale relationships, people don't talk about that when you're in that love state, that 6 to 18 month period, when your partner can't do anything wrong. You love how they chew. You love everything about them. Everything they do is cute. You can't get enough of them. But then it's a scientific fact and completely natural that you're going to move out of that stage. And so when you move out of that stage around that 18 month mark, then that's when it takes effort. That's when it takes time. You have to really put in time and effort to understand your partner and keep filling your love tank. Because if you don't, it's going to get boring.
It's called the honeymoon stage. In the beginning, the oxytocin feels good. The serotonin is like, you're just feeling this person because it's new. And like you said, I think the challenge is once you get used to each other in a certain time frame passes, because you're having the same experience or similar experiences with this person, you get used to them. And that's when the effort really begins. It's kind of like marriage. I joke that marriage begins not like during the actual beginning of a marriage, but when you wake up and you're like, is this the person that I chose to marry? That's the real marriage, because you're seeing them for like who they are holistically. It's not a bad thing, but you're kind of, you see them in totality versus before you are kind of almost, you know, blinded by love. I mean, which is, yeah,
that's exactly norm. What it is. You're blinded by love. That's exactly mm-hmm. what it is. But the problem is that we hear that love part, but no one tells us that, okay, there's nothing wrong with your relationship. It's supposed to move into this next phase.
Right, right.
It's what you do in this phase now.
Right.
We don't get the lessons from the end, just like we don't get the second lessons. And that's where the break is.
Totally, totally. I agree with you. I feel like there's stages in relationships. There's the beginning stage. There's the getting through the conflict stage, learning to work together stage. And you find a flow in each stage, but the relationships, they have to go through these different stages to grow. And my parents, I'm fortunate enough, they were married over 57 years. My mom recently passed last year, but they were married 57 years, and my grandparents, 60 years plus, aunts and uncles, 40 years plus. So I saw a lot of relationships, which is why I'm so like enamored by the subject. And I saw so many different dynamics. But one thing I know is that none of the relationships were perfect. It was just them learning to work together and align together and communicate with each other, even through those really difficult times. So I think sex is similar. There's going to be good and bad, and you got to keep going.
You have to be open, and you have to be vulnerable, and you have to feel like it's okay. A lot of times, even in our marriages, I see it in relationships, not necessarily marriage, but relationships where people are worried that they're going to be judged by their partner. They're afraid to even explain, like, I want to do this, but we're like, what are they going to say? Are they going to judge me? Are they going
right.
to they think I'm a nasty because it's your partner, but they're afraid. And I've seen where the person wants to do the same thing, but they never.
Absolutely. I have too. I've had those coaching sessions where the guy's like, it's boring. And I'm like, well, if it's boring for you, it's possible it might be boring on the other side too. Have you talked to your partner about this? And it's like the assumptions of what people make around their sexual needs and desires is very interesting. And a lot of times your partner is feeling similar. There's things they want to explore and do and feel comfortable in doing. So it's almost once that one person opens the door, it's always surprising what can happen.
It's okay to say no. It's okay to say maybe I'm not quite ready for that. But once you open the door, that's where it starts. One of the things I often give an example of, there's things in my marriage, for example, that I would never do at 10 years, but at the 15 year mark, I decided that maybe that's something that we can explore. But at that time when I was asked, I said, I'm not ready for it yet. Let's table that. You know, mm-hmm. let's table that. I didn't say no, but at that moment, I was not ready to do that particular act. And it's okay for you to say that with your partner. It's just really reframing people to say, no, this is who you chose to be with. They love you, you love them, you need to use your words.
Absolutely. Man, this is such an interesting conversation. I could talk to you for hours about this. I guess one question I'll leave with before we end our interview is, if people can know one thing about sex, what would you want that one thing to be?
You never stop learning. It gets Ooh. Better and better the more you take the time to learn it.
That's a good one. So people, you got to keep going. You got to keep learning, keep evolving with your partner. It ain't over till it's over. And I think personally, like I read articles about older couples because I love like listening to older couples talk about like how they have stayed together, what they've been through. And when I hear they're still having sex, I'm like, wow, well, that's great. That gives me hope. I feel really good to yes. hear that.
Yes. I plan on taking it all the way as long as I can.
Hey, that's their MO too. I mean, it might not be as intense, like you said, it changes, but it just shows that as humans, we still have desire, no matter how old we are. And I think that's a really cool thing that God has implanted in us, which yeah. is a positive. So how can people find you? What projects are you working on that you want to share with people?
I absolutely want to share my new project that's launching this month, called the Sister Circle. And what that is a private community where you come in, we have monthly calls We talk about any and all things sexual with no judgment or shame. A lot of my content on Instagram is going to be shifting to this private community because I've been banned on Instagram, so I can't do a lot on there right now.
Oh, seriously? No. Okay.
And so now I'm moving into this space. We create this safe container for women, it's for women, where you have personal access to me. Again, you have monthly Q&A calls, you have exclusive content, and I'm literally teaching you what you need to have a successful sex life as well as relationships. So that's the project that's going to be launching this month, my membership program. So I'm super excited about that.
Awesome. And man, Instagram, that's not right. We need sexual education. I'm telling you, badly, even more badly now from what I'm seeing out here. But anyway, that's another show. Where can they find you on Instagram for now? And is there any other social media platforms that you're on?
No, right now I'm only doing Instagram, and that's Kane the Coach. And then it's probably best to find me on my website at romanticdiscovery.com. Again, that's romanticdiscovery.com. And then my backup is Kane the Coach One.
All right. She's got them all covered, guys. She's got them all covered. I've enjoyed talking to you, Kane. Thank you so much for enlightening my listeners. I know this was a bit of a risque topic, but I don't know. I just feel like we can take away a lot of things that we think are a certain way by talking about it and just being more open about it. And so I just enjoyed your honesty and your transparency around even your own personal experiences, being married 30 plus years and things you've learned, and the fact that you keep learning, and the fact that you've told us now that we have to keep learning too. So thank you for that. We're gonna wrap the show on that end. We were so excited to have Kane on. We'll have more exciting guests in the future. Please remember to subscribe to future episodes of the Bed Talks podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and other platforms. And on that note, we're going to end it with the classic again. For the youngins out there who don't know Mr. Marvin Gaye, who was the man, he was just great. Like he's not even from my era really, but I loved his music, the fact that he was so romantic, and then the fact that he was shy but putting out these great tantalizing tunes is amazing too. So until next time, guys, XOXO.